Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Celebrate Recovery podcast. My name is Johnny, and I'm a believer who struggles with alcoholism. Well, today we're going to bring you the second part of what's going to be a three-part series of our Q&A session that we did, Bob Wood, Tina Davis, and I, where we answer questions that we got on the road at different training events. So I hope you enjoy it.
All right, next question. I like this one because this actually happened in a group I was in. A newcomer came in, and in his sharing time, he said, "What do I do? Someone, please tell me." And then he sat back in his chair and waited for crosstalk. So what do you do in that situation when somebody does that?
What did you do in that situation? Well, you said you were experienced.
I told him that we weren't able to do that right now. But that afterwards at Solid Rock Cafe, we'd meet with him, and if he'd like to continue sharing, he could do so.
Awesome.
That sounds really good.
That's what I would do too.
Because the reality is, people do come to recovery, and they want answers. You know, some of us kind of are like, I'll figure this out. You can't tell me what to do. Tina, you know, you can find a sponsor account, a sponsor that you would take direction from. There are other people that are like, my life is in such shambles that if you tell me to shave my head and shake a tambourine at the airport, that's what I'll do.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so,
because they want somebody to fix them.
They want to be fixed. They want to change, you know. And this young guy, he came in and he said, what do I do? Someone tell me. Sat back in his chair. And everybody kind of looked at me, you know, like, Johnny, you know, and I said, well, you know, unfortunately, we can't really do that right now. But if you want to meet with some of us afterwards over in Solid Rock Cafe, we'd be happy to give you some advice of what we think you should do next. If you'd like, you still have 3 minutes if you'd like to share. And he said, no, I'm just, you know, he wasn't comfortable with that yet. He just wanted to ask for help. He came up to me after the group. He said, so what do I do? I said, you see this guy right here? You two are going to talk. And for the rest of the evening, the two of them sat down. And have a conversation. You know what I mean? And so,
I think as the leader of the group that you definitely need it to respond to that individual in love. You just keep it nice and short, nice and brief, because you don't want to bring all the attention on one individual, because chances are there's another newcomer sitting right next to him who's too shy to ask for help or afraid to ask for help. And so, yeah, you just kept it really simple, and you ensured that he did connect with another person. And after the meeting, and that's what's so wonderful about making sure you have a fellowship after your open share group, that the conversation can keep moving forward.
It's also why we need to encourage our newcomers as much as possible to go one-on-one, to newcomers one-on-one, and if you don't have a newcomers one-on-one, to implement one.
So they can, because they could have
answered that question. Because he would have gotten that answer
question.
He would have been able to get that answer in newcomers 101.
Right.
That's right.
Or he would have at least have known the guidelines, and that we weren't going to be able to answer his question had he gone to newcomers 101.
Very true.
So the other thing with that is that we don't want to shame somebody.
Exactly.
But at the same time, if, you know, if we encourage everyone to go to 101, they'll have a much better, you know, they're going to get the answer to those questions that they have answered in a clear way that way. Okay, this is a good one, too. How do you deal with small group participants who make others in the group feel unsafe? Can you ask that person not to come back to the small group?
Wow, that's a big question.
That's a dynamite one.
I mean, it would be probably easier to answer if we knew what about it was making it unsafe.
Right, exactly.
I think that's a pretty broad statement to just say that somebody makes others feel unsafe. There must be a reason for that. You know, some of the reasons might be if they were fixing, or if they were giving advice. Another reason might be is that that person never shares. That might begin to make the group feel unsafe. But I think for me, I'd have to know a little bit more about where that's coming from.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you've got some experiences that you can share with that.
Whatever that specific is, we would be able to respond specifically. And so, absolutely, there's, you know, when each scenario or each group dynamic is very unique, and it would depend on the circumstance.
Yeah, I agree with you both, but I also would say that if someone is not making them feel unsafe, but if someone has made the group unsafe, I believe there is a time where people can be asked not to come back to a group.
Absolutely.
In my estimation, the safety of the group is more important than an individual's recovery, than one person's recovery. So if somebody has done something that has not just made them feel unsafe, but has legitimately made the group unsafe by breaking guidelines a couple of times, by whatever it is, once you find out the specifics, if they've made the group unsafe, there is a time that you can ask them not to come back. But Bob, you and I, Dina, we talk about this all the time. There is not a black and white Xeroxed answer for this kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Once the person has done this, this is how you ask them to leave the group. Once it's just like relapse. When somebody's relapsed, there's not a black and white, here's how to restore someone. The most important thing to do is to talk to the person and find out what's going on.
And there's a difference, you kind of started to go into it, there's a difference between unsafe and uncomfortable.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people that make a group feel uncomfortable.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that happens, and that's okay.
Right.
Uncomfortable is okay. Unsafe. Is it truly unsafe, or is it just making people feel kind of uncomfortable in the group?
Is it personality or behavior?
Yeah.
Right.
If it's someone's behavior that's causing something to be unsafe, we can address that. But if it's someone's personality, that's a different story. And the reason why I bring that up is I'm thinking about in my early years of recovery, there was a gal who attended the group that reminded me of my older sister.
Mm.
Her personality, her just the way she talked and presented herself, and I felt very uncomfortable around her because I was very uncomfortable around my older sister. She was, you know, one of the, you know,
yeah,
one of the tough relationships that I had in my life, and so I saw it as God giving me an opportunity to get tough and to get stronger and to build confidence and to look beyond someone's personality. And so over the months and even years to come, we eventually became friends and learned a lot more about her. But it was her personality that made me feel unsafe. And that wasn't nothing to do with her behavior at all. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So that's where, you know, the feelings aren't fact, but behavior is much more of a thing that we would address as a ministry.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Next question. What do you do if someone has missed several meetings in a row and then comes back? And I think this one will specifically answer as far as the step study is concerned.
Right.
Open share, people are going to come and go. That's part of the openness
mm-hmm.
of the group. But step study, Bob, you've got a guy who comes to your group. He misses 2 or 3 weeks. He comes back. He misses another couple of meetings. He comes back. How do you handle that situation?
Well, we actually had somebody very similar to that that started through the first workbook and then missed the entire fourth step.
Oh, my gosh.
And then wanted to come back at the third workbook.
Mm-hmm.
Join the group, just like, okay, I'm back. I'm ready to join the group.
Uh-huh.
And we're going, you missed the heart of what we do in this step study, which was the fourth step.
Right.
And so we encouraged that person to go ahead and start the new one that was getting ready to start, that they just missed too much of the group,
mm-hmm.
and that they really needed to consider starting a new group, and that they
yeah.
could not continue to participate in this group, and we just had to set that boundary with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay
mm-hmm.
to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not.
Yeah.
We say at the front end, there's an expectation for you to be at this group every week.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Realizing
mm-hmm.
there's going to be times we miss. I mean, we all miss groups once in a while. That's
right.
going to happen.
Right.
But this ongoing not showing up. And then the other thing that we bring up is talking to the person.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they missing the groups?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Not just set down the rule that if you miss the group, you can't come back anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But what we really try to do is figure out, why is she not coming to group?
Right.
Was there something that's come up? I mean, who knows? When you find out the story, you might find out that there was a death in the family that nobody knew about, and he's been back, you know, in another part of the country tending
right.
to the needs of his family.
Right.
And instead of just finding out what was really going on,
mm-hmm.
set down the rule, then that doesn't work. And then
right.
other times you find out they were just flaking.
Right.
They just
mm-hmm.
didn't feel like coming. Didn't want to commit.
Lack of commitment.
What's interesting, though, is somebody, even for a good reason, missing principles, not just a week or two, but missing like an entire principle,
mm-hmm.
we're not doing them any favors by allowing them to continue
right.
in that group.
Because
even if they missed,
mm-hmm.
even if they missed for a legitimate, you know, good reason,
mm-hmm.
it's still, in my estimation, okay to say, I hear you, I understand that. I want to suggest you start over in another group.
Well, and here's
because I feel like
done.
You missed too much.
Here's something we've done also. If they have missed some, if they're really committed and have a good legitimate reason to be gone, is they will stay current with the group,
mm-hmm.
doing all their work, and they'll meet with their leaders before or after
okay.
the group and go through the materials.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't want to put somebody in a penalty box for legitimate reasons and they really want to grow, but circumstances came up that they couldn't
right.
avoid.
I think
so. We'll work with them outside the group to
yeah.
help them stay.
I think what I'm saying is it's not a penalty box situation. It's saying I value you too much to let you cheapen your experience. And I think that that's a good way to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
By what you just said about allowing them to do that. But I just think so many of our leaders want to. make it a little easier.
Not set a boundary with them.
And kind of say, well, you know, they had this hard thing or this was going on, that was going on. I get that. I understand that. I've got stuff in my life. Tina's got stuff in her life. Bob, you do too. And we make choices. You know what I mean? Now, when emergencies happen, that's a whole other story.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I look at it like this. When somebody missed a group, did anybody in my group call, did anybody in my group call them to see where they were? If not, shame on us.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Now, if they
did... have known about it before.
Right. Mm-hmm. If they did call mm-hmm. and we didn't get a response, did that person then, like on a second missed meeting, did they call us? You know what I mean? And I realize that there's no hard and fast rule here, but was there any communication?
Mm-hmm.
If there was an emergency in my family, I would probably want to call the guys in my group to connect with them,
sure
to let them know what's going on.
Yeah.
If 4 weeks go by, you don't hear from somebody, nobody in my group tried to call them, they didn't try to call me, and all of a sudden they come back, that's a different story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And again, I think what we're saying here and about we did a lot on a question ago too is that we have to talk to each other to figure this kind of stuff out.
Yeah, because the relationship in those 4 weeks that we didn't talk to them and they didn't talk to us, there was no relationship that continued to be built up. It just stopped.
Right.
Whereas if you miss a few meetings and the relationship is continuing, then there's a different dynamic there. And so, again, this is one of those really great gray areas, but keeping in mind, too, that when an individual and myself, at one time in my life, habitually having patterns, negative mm-hmm. patterns that did not benefit me or anyone else in my life, it's like that doing a disservice by allowing them to miss 4 weeks in a row, letting them come back for a while, and then they developed a pattern and we're allowing that pattern to continue, and that is, you know, that's a disservice to that individual. You know, they need to know that even in recovery there's consequences to decisions and choices
right.
that they make.
Mm-hmm.
And that means going back to step one.
Mm-hmm. All right, next question for step study. This is actually a guideline question. I'm going to read the whole question.
Okay.
We don't strictly limit our sharing to 5 minutes. At least the group I'm in views the step study as a place to fully explain our answers to questions. Sometimes this takes more than 5 minutes per person per question. This seems to work well enough in our group. How important is the 5-minute limit in the step study setting? Tina?
It's so important. It's part of our DNA.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'll just like to end it with that one.
Yeah. The guidelines are tantamount. I mean, you know, we have to follow the guidelines. And I understand that every once in a while something will work for a particular
That's
group.
That's what a sponsor is for, those details
right.
and all that information and that explanation. It's counterproductive in a step study group.
Yeah. And the groups,
over 5 minutes.
The groups aren't going to grow if every person in your group is sharing every answer to every question and taking over 5 minutes to do it.
Yeah. You wouldn't even get through a question a week.
Oh, my gosh.
In most groups.
It's unproductive.
If we have 20 people in a step study and they all answer one question at 5 minutes, that's an hour and 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's too long.
I think leaders that are allowing that need to maybe examine why they're coming to that conclusion that that's okay. And what I mean by that is the tendency that group leaders can fall into codependency
right.
with some of their newcomers. And allowing them to go on over 5 minutes and giving these full explanations, it's not the form for that. And the step study can't be the end all to all things in their recovery. And that's what sponsors are for, and that's what fellowship is for. And all the components of Celebrate Recovery does allow that kind of detail in the various aspects of the seven keys. The step study group doesn't compile all seven keys in that step study group.
But think about your newer leader, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Newer ministry.
Yeah.
I mean, this rubs against every codependent fiber in my being.
Yeah.
And I do feel that way.
To cut people off.
Off. They're having a breakthrough moment. They're sharing details. They're finally getting this out, maybe even for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to interrupt them.
Right.
It's not that I shouldn't.
Right.
But just kind of that is hard to do.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It is really
all
hard
the guidelines
to do.
Are hard. That's why we did those.
And to step in there and ask them to go ahead and wrap it up and you know finish their thought. I mean that is really hard. Doesn't mean we shouldn't do it.
Right.
I know I need to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's so hard.
I think
get somebody to do that. I think that's where a lot of these leaders are coming from. That's what I hear over and over again.
Yeah,
is that person's having kind of a breakthrough moment. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to interrupt that.
And here's the thing. I get that. I mean, I really do. But in a step study setting, if you're doing it right as a participant, you've written out your answers to the question. In my step study, we read our answers to the question. Now, because we had 3 to 5 minutes when the question was, what are you in control of, and we said nothing, you know, or whatever it was, you might elaborate that on that a little bit. But there are times, especially as we got closer to the fourth principle and as we worked deeper and deeper into our recovery, where you start going, I wrote a lot, you know, and I'm going to read what I wrote rather than, you know, Bob, you know this as well as I do. Not every guy wrote out his answers.
Right.
There's a lot of guys holding their books up close to their face because they want me to think that they've got answers that they don't have. I know that happens. But those guys, when they share, they're sharing, in my experience, does not stay focused on the question they're sharing about.
And end up wondering.
And the longer we share, the farther away. Look at us right now. If we stayed on this question for 20, 30 minutes,
right.
We come back and we
it's a completely different question.
What was the question we
Did
asked?
Did we ever answer it?
It's going to be different. But that's going to happen. Yeah, that's what's going to happen when I share. If I start sharing about, you know, what am I in my life am I in control over, but I'm allowed 15 minutes, sooner or later, I'm probably not sharing on that sentiment anymore. I'm not sharing on that thing anymore. You know, and so... You know, for me, if everyone wrote out the answers to their questions the week before, got there, and in a group of 30 people, we're not all going to be able to answer every question. Even, you know, if we went through each and every question, it would take us weeks to get through one lesson. I'm going to have to choose a few questions. These are the ones we're going to answer tonight. You know, I mean, there's going to be times where you look out and there's 40 men with their books. You know, it's like we can't all take 3 to 5 minutes on each and every question. That would take forever to get through.
Mm-hmm.
There have been times in a group where I've needed to share, even an open share setting. And because other people have been there and shared, I haven't gotten a chance, even following the 3 to 5 minute guideline. So are there times where people aren't going to be able to fully explain themselves? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Are there times where I'm not going to get a chance to share on a question maybe I feel really passionate about? Yeah, that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But that's why relationships are important.
Yeah,
you know?
And an encouragement to the group leaders out there listening is that you're not, how do I say this, you're not interfering, by keeping the timeline, you are not interfering with their growth and their recovery process. It's still happening. And just to be encouraged that you're not keeping them from growing, that doesn't keep them from, do you know what I'm trying to say?
Well, that one share that you are having a hard time cutting them off with isn't the end-all, be-all of their recovery.
Exactly.
Right.
It's not going to stop them or limit them in any way, shape, or form.
Exactly.
They're going to be okay. They're going to continue to share and open up.
Exactly. It's going to keep going. It's not going to stifle their recovery process if you say, let's go ahead and wrap it up so that everyone has a chance to share. Their recovery's not being stifled at that very moment.
Especially
it really is.
If they're writing out their answers.
Right.
Yes.
If they have accountability.
They
and
have
a sponsor.
Right.
If they have those, the program is really not the meeting.
It is part of it.
If somebody says they're working their program and all they're doing is going to a meeting,
they're not really working the program.
Only
part of it.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, they're, you know, you can't work a program unless you do step five. You can't do step five unless you have someone in your life that you trust.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
and so you can't have someone in your life that you trust if you're not looking for people outside of that hour or 2 hours you're in a circle. It just doesn't happen that way. And I do want to pull it back one second. I keep saying groups of 40. That's not the average group. And the last step study I did, I used to work at nights, and so I could never have gone to recovery if I wanted to. Because I worked in a restaurant, so Friday nights, forget about it. I'm never going to get Friday night off. And a night a week, maybe I'd be able to come once or twice a month. So I started a group in the morning once I started working here to try to help guys who worked at night. It was a very, very small group. We finished with four guys, not including me. So I understand, you know, in that group, we got through a lot more questions than we would have in a normal Saddleback staff study group. We got through pretty much, we answered every question. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I understand that. But we still stuck to the guidelines each and every week. We had there were four of us.
When we first started,
there were two of us, me and another guy. And we shared, and we were going to be there for 2 hours because I didn't care, and we took turns. I'd share for 3 minutes, he'd share for 3 minutes. I'd share for 3 minutes. We weren't working on the books yet, but even with one other guy in the room, each guideline was followed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he ended up not finishing the group, which I think is kind of funny, but had he... And the first 3 or 4 weeks we met, when it was just he and I in a room together, if we're cross-talking, fixing each other, not taking, you know, not taking the time limit into account, letting us, let, you know, just chatting, well, the minute we opened up that circle and a few more guys joined, he's going to feel like, wait, this isn't, I was having counseling. You know what I mean? I was having a conversation now with at this point, somebody I consider a friend. Now there's all these strangers in my group. And now I have to follow all these rules and all these guidelines, you know. And so the guidelines are important no matter the size of your group.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, the thing is, if you have a smaller step study like I did, 4 or 5 people, to think about instead of saying, hey, we're going to be fully known and know each other fully, we're going to get through more questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to answer 5 questions instead of one. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That would happen in a large group.
Mm-hmm.
And so... because I got to tell you, if I came to a group and on 4 weeks we were still on the first lesson, I probably wouldn't come back, not knowing we've got over 25 lessons that we're going to have to answer, we're going to have to do.
Because at that point, it's going to feel like it's a 5-year group, not
I want
1 year. I'm not even ready for 1 year.
It's hard enough to take one day at a time, not 1 year at a time.
I want movement.
Right.
You know, I want to feel like things are happening in my life.
Right.
You know, and I'm the kind of guy that I enjoy checking things off. You know, I enjoy going, here's where I was, here's where I am.
Right.
You can't do that if you take all that time every time.
Right.
So, all right. This is a great question. Tina, is it a CR requirement to tell people finishing a step study that they must, underlined, write their testimony before they can graduate from the step study? She's working on it. She's trying to put
it
together.
I'm processing. I think it's ideal that group participants who've just finished a step study group get their testimony written down on paper. And at this point, it's some of our step study group leaders are requiring it. They're requiring it in a way that doesn't come across as a requirement, and group participants are very happy and excited about writing their testimony. And during their graduation, if you will, for sake of a better word, they each share their parts of their testimonies with each other that they have written down, and they turn them into the group leaders. That may be something down the line that we may consider as a pathway to leadership, that they need to turn in their testimonies before becoming a Celebrate Recovery leader. And I don't think young Celebrate Recoveries are at that point yet. Maybe they are. Maybe that would help expedite that process. But I think if participants understand the importance and reasons behind writing their testimony, the biblical perspective on it, that they'd be more likely to do so. Whether it be a requirement, it just really depends on the individual Celebrate Recovery. It's up to you to make that a requirement or not.
Bob, how are you handling it in Central, sort of a newer group?
I usually appoint somebody a date for when they're going to do their testimony, and I have them get it to me about 2 weeks before.
Okay.
I have found that just making the general call for people to sign up to do their testimony doesn't work.
Yeah.
And so during a planning meeting that I had several months ago, I went to all my current leaders, and I took my calendar, and I had all my slots lined up, and I said, okay, who's doing this one? Okay, who's doing this one? Who's doing this one? Who's doing this one? Until I got everybody in the room and only had 14 leaders. So I had everybody in the room signed up to do their testimony.
Awesome.
And then worked on getting it to me, you know, in a timely manner so we could edit it and do all that kind of stuff too.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of, for me, that's just how we do it.
Mm-hmm.
Not making it mandatory. It's just how we do it.
It's
just, this is what we do.
Right.
You get signed up, we put you in a slot, and you share your testimony.
Right.
It's not like we do it some other way.
Yeah.
So I think normalizing it
yes.
is a way to make it non-optional. It's just normalizing, this is how we do it. You just write your testimony as you finish a step study or become a leader.
Mm-hmm.
You write your testimony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I think that I think we've gotten away from that. It was very much like that in the early years. I can remember being at a leaders meeting, and Pastor John would have us raise our hands. You haven't shared your testimony yet, and a few of us would raise our hands, and he would just start pointing and putting
and
the dates
and, dates
and just
yeah.
slotting us in.
Mm-hmm.
And we've gotten away from that a little bit, and maybe it's because of the size of our leadership team is so large. But there's another way of incorporating it back in to where it's that normal in through the pathway to leadership.
I've really never understood why somebody wouldn't want to share their testimony.
Yeah.
I mean, it is such an amazing opportunity to share what God has done in a person's life.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how many chains that I see break on people.
Yeah.
When they, even if they've gone through a step set, even if they've gone through all the recovery that they've been through, and then they go up there and share it,
mm-hmm.
and you watch God squeeze their heart, and it comes out their eyes, and you watch families sitting there watching them, and relationships getting even more restored right in front of you.
Right.
I don't know why somebody wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah.
So
I think they're forgetting that
amazing.
It's not about them.
So powerful.
Yeah. Forgetting that.
I think what happens too is what blew me away after I shared my testimony on a Friday night years ago was that a guy came up to me afterwards and said, "You shared my story. Exactly my story." I mean, if I didn't share that, that guy wouldn't have, you know what I mean? He wouldn't have felt connected that night. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I just think, you know, when we begin recovery, we feel so alone, don't we? You know what I mean? It's like, no one's gone through what I'm going through. No one's been no one's been as bad as I've been.
Mm-hmm.
We feel so alone. We realize there's a place like Sober Recovery where we're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get the opportunity to hear someone's testimony who speaks directly to the issues I'm dealing with in the way that I'm dealing with them. That's an amazing experience.
It really
you know?
Is. It's like a spiritual high that you never come down from.
So, is there a requirement to graduate from the class? No.
No.
For our leaders, if they want to become a leader, they have to become willing to write their testimony. I really want to change that language. I want to say, to become a leader, you are going to give your testimony.
Uh-huh.
You know? And, because I think it's easy to say I'm willing to do it. It's hard to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And thanks for bringing back to that, because the question was to graduate step study, and that would be no, that's not a requirement.
Right.
But to become a leader, that's when we make it a requirement.
I know we have someone on staff, and when she does a step study, she says, "You're all turning in your testimony to me by this date," and it's part of. It's not. She doesn't claim that it's our requirement. You know what I mean? She just says, this is what's happening.
As a matter of fact.
And by the time you've spent 11 months with a leader, you're usually willing to do what they tell you to do.
You build that trust.
So she's had really good, and she doesn't say, because it's just a leader, it's not, and then you're going to do it on a Friday night, just you're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's the thing, the Bible tells us we don't have to know everything about our faith. We don't have to be able to answer every question.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're asked what happened to us, we're supposed to be able to provide an example.
That's right.
You know, and how can we do that if we haven't written it down? Do I know my story? Yeah. Can I share it in 5 minutes if I haven't written it down and spent some time looking at it? Not a chance.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so when I get a chance to talk to somebody, I usually don't have more than 5 minutes to share my story. You know? And so I think that it's important, doing it on a general meeting night in a large group time. Forget about that. But just being able to articulate to someone, here's where I was,
mm-hmm.
here's how I changed, and here's what's happened to me since I changed in a short time frame, that takes a lot of thought.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, thoughts become real when I write them down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I think to encourage your step study participants to write their testimony is a great idea.
It really is.
Are you going to get more testimonies if everybody who complete the stat study writes their testimony? Yes. Should it be a requirement? That's up to each group.
All right, everyone, that's going to do it for us today. Be sure to check back soon. We'll have that third installment up. We're also going to be recording pretty much every day at the Sober Recovery Summit that's just coming up in a week or so here. And we're going to be bringing you interviews with our regional directors and state reps and just some cool stuff that's going to be happening there at the summit. So you're going to want to check back for that. And we'll see you soon.